Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So our first order of the day is to remind you that next weekend is our monthly stock market update webinar, which occurs earlier in the day at 9:15. You can register for that at our website, irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner says webinar, a couple of clicks, your email, first and last name, and you will be set to join us live in the morning, or you will get a replay link. As long as you register, we'll know you're interested. We do these every month on the first Saturday of the month, unless it's a three-day holiday, and then we do them on the second Saturday. But each one of them is new and unique. We do not have a pre-programmed, repeated webinar. I mean, at this point in time, there is no webinar except a date and a time.
We'll see what comes up next week. That's right.
Because it depends on what happens this week. And that's how updated we try to keep the information. But now is now, and that means you have an opportunity to call and ask questions about your portfolio. If you have a position in your portfolio that you're a little bit concerned about, a security that trades, I mean, that's basically our only criteria, or you've had your local friendly neighborhood financial advisor suggest that you make a change in your portfolio and you want to know, is he doing this for himself or for is it really for me? Well, you can get a second opinion right here. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And the lines are open. We'll be glad to speak with you. You'll end up on the board. We'll know you're there. And as soon as we can include you in the show, you too will be on the air in the Puget Sound area. You know, one thing about life is it almost never works the way that you had planned it.
Doesn't matter how hard you planned or how far ahead you're looking. It's never just clear sailing, it seems.
Life is messy. It's unpredictable, and so is the market. It seems like, particularly in the last couple of years, I would say it seems like every 6 months or so, but sometimes it's more frequently than that, something happens, and your response is, I don't think it's ever happened before. This was unexpected. Well, frankly, folks, that's the way the market is. It is unexpected.
Yeah, that's the natural state. That's what people need to get their head wrapped around, is that all this, it's never happened before. That happens all the time in the market. And every time it happens, people are saying, well, this shouldn't happen this way. And you know, our response is always, but it is. That's what's going on. That's what you need to deal with. And this whole concept of some sort of equilibrium market or a normal market is just doesn't exist. It's not there. And all of those people looking for a normal market, all that is all the craziness smoothed out with the long-term average. That's it. It never really happened.
Well, and that's how most people build their portfolios, not on what is the reality of today, but what's happened over the last 90 years. How does this look if I had started investing 90 years ago and closed my eyes and just held on to everything along the way? Well, that looks pretty good. Until, of course, one of those things that has never happened before shows up and your plan goes away because you really didn't have 90 years to invest. And frankly, you don't. And that's a major problem with the way most investment portfolios are put together. A principal issue is, how do you control risk? Because everybody wants to be in the market when the market goes up. Nobody wants to be in the market when the market goes down.
Isn't that funny? Funny how that works out. But that's exactly what happens. And if you've taken the time to fill out a risk return questionnaire, if you're honest with yourself, you would fill that out differently if you're in the midst of a raging bull market than in the midst of a raging bear market. Your answers change. Everybody's aggressive on the way up and everybody's conservative on the way down. So there's no value in those, and there's no value in trying to make the market be something it's not, which is consistent.
So when things aren't going the way that we think they should, like, well, I think the market is overpriced, I wouldn't put my money in there now because it's the Fed is manipulating it. Well, I don't know that the Fed actually manipulates it. They have certainly driven interest rates down by being a major buyer. And if somebody's continuing to buy in very large quantities, it will keep interest rates low until they sell. And the Fed has not been selling in a very long time, certainly not any quantity. So is that manipulation? Not directly. Have an impact? Yes, it has an impact. In fact, it has an impact in such a way that it is actually distorted and altered the ability of most people to adequately protect the downside in their portfolio. Because that's bonds.
Right.
That's in bonds as a drawdown offset to risk in stocks has been outdated for some time. There's another article out this week that says the 60-40 portfolio is dead in the water. Bonds are highly correlated to stocks, which means that when stocks go down, so do bonds. They're supposed to go up, but they're going down. And they're following the same path as equities. And so that normal risk offset that fixed income provides, it's out the window, if you will.
It's not there, and it's really not going to come back any time very soon, as long as the government's out there gobbling up treasuries, even at the low rates. That's part of the problem. They don't care what the rate is. They're buying them to make sure they're bought, and so they bought over half of them last year that were issued. And so they're a huge buyer. They're huge in the market, and they're keeping those rates artificially low. And that lowers the return targets for everything else around them, because that's supposed to be the riskless return. If that's almost zero, nothing else needs to be much higher than that either to make it all work.
So with low interest rates like that, it's a really critical factor in terms of stock valuation. Yeah. Trying to figure out whether a stock is overpriced or underpriced, overvalued, undervalued, is a math problem. You want to look at earnings, you look at price to book. There's all sorts of formulas that people look at. But interest rates, typically the 10-year treasury rate, is what is used as a discount rate to determine overvalue, undervaluation. And with that particularly low at the present time, that means equities have a higher value than they otherwise would have. And this 2% rate, 0 to 2% range, historically since 1928, only occurs 4% of the time. Huh. But people build, financial advisors build models for their clients using an interest rate that is typically somewhere around 6%. And a 6% rate, a 4 to 6 range, only occurs about 20% of the time. So even that is a low estimate of the efficiency of bonds as a risk management tool. You need to do something differently. And that is what we explain every month, how we are managing these changes in the market. And that's why you should register for Saturday's webinar. It's this Saturday, 9:15 in the morning. It's on the web. You can watch it on your phone or on your computer. All you have to do is register at iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks, your name and email address, and you're going to be set. And even if you can't join us live, where you can participate in Q&A, you'll get a replay link. And with that, if you want to ask questions, you can call us at the office at 800-317-9119. This has been a while since we've been on KTTH, and Perry, I don't remember if we were doing Week in Review when we were last on KTTH.
I don't think we were. I think we started after that. So,
if you're not on the list, you should be. Join nearly 1,000 other people, mostly in the Puget Sound area, that get our Week in Review. And a large number actually open it up and read it every week. We know that. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. help@iriradio.com. Put Week in Review in the subject line, first and last name, in the body of the email so that we know who to actually send it to and set you up in constant contact. If you do not like it, it's easy. One click unsubscribe, which we rarely ever see. So when we're looking at the bonds and interest rate where they are, what has actually happened here is that the massive amounts of money have gone into bonds this year because people are assuming the stock market is overpriced and they don't want anything to do with it until this last week when there was a lot of money flowing into technology stocks. But are we facing inflation? We'll come back to inflation as we deal with this. Moving on into the show, but on my countdown clock, it looks like we might as well go ahead and take a break here.
We're right there. We're close enough. That's fine. Would like to remind everyone else again that next Saturday, August 7th, we are having our monthly market updates, 9:15 a.m., and you can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and give the registration link a click. You're going to get an email back, and there's a link in there. And next Saturday morning, just click that link, and you will be live online with us. You can see what we're talking about. We can show you the charts that we're referring to. We'll cover the economy. We'll cover what's going on in the market out there. We'll cover some information about what we're doing with client portfolios right now. And then we always have plenty of time to answer your questions. It's a very good time to get a second opinion on anything, down to including individual securities that you're holding in your portfolio. You want another take on something in there? We'd be happy to do that for you. Again, just go to iriradio.com to register. If you'd like to talk to us today, we'd be happy to talk to you. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help@iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender.
Well, I thought by now we would get to the spending program that is making its way through Congress, but my bump's a little ahead of schedule, so we'll probably get there. We were talking about bonds.
Those are definitely the biggest spenders anywhere.
Well, that's true. here we are with bonds and interest rates and inflation, and usually these things are pretty tightly tied together. Inflation goes up, interest rates go up right along with it, and they are not. Now, if you're a baby boomer or a parent of a baby boomer, you have seen higher inflation rates than we are currently living through. These are nothing compared to what happened back in the 70s.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, the conditions were different, which means that using that period of time as a way to analyze how you should be responding to this one may not be the best thing to do. But we've never had inflation at this level with interest rates so low. And that's normally, the inflation rates are normally the way we use to gauge inflation. Certainly what bond traders, who are supposed to be the smartest people in the business, what they think about it. And the question is, do they have it wrong? Are they on the wrong side of the equation here? Because apparently they do believe that the transitory nature of inflation that Mr. Powell talks about frequently is the real story.
Otherwise, rates would be higher. Bond purchasers would demand higher interest rates, because they're going to have to cover this higher rate of inflation. And of course, the bond rates are still extraordinarily low. So they're really not anticipating any inflation for any extended period of time. And unfortunately, of course, no one gets to know if that's right until later. You have to find that out as it unfolds.
So as the inflation fears or discussions have continued to rise, what has been baffling investors is that the yield on bonds has been falling. It just simply doesn't make a lot of sense. And even among professionals, this is a confusing situation. We take the Vanguard Group, for instance. They are forecasting a future where inflation runs consistently above the Fed's 2% target. So they are bearish with regard to bonds and certainly parts of the market. Standing in the other corner of the ring is the head of BlackRock's America's Fundamental Fixed Income, Bob Miller. And he thinks that in the inflation-protected treasury securities called TIPS, that they have run their course, they are at the high end, and he is shorting the bond market. Certainly shorting TIPS. I don't know that there's that much more to short if you're on the 10-year or on the 20. Yep. But as far as inflation-protected securities, he thinks they are at their apex and they can only go down from here. That is a big bet. But it comes from a guy who's really smart on the fixed income side. But it shows you that even among professionals, there's confusion because of where interest rates are and the economic data coming through that shows we have a great deal of economic strength. We are growing. There is no doubt about that.
Sure.
And we have, infrastructure bill. I just found my notes. So we are being told that there's consensus in the Senate anyway on $1.2 trillion of infrastructure, of which about $550 billion are things that most of us would agree are actual infrastructure, like roads, bridges, and similar projects, railroad, clean energy transmissions part of it. This is something that we are in dire need of, is to spend $7.5 billion on a network of electrical vehicle chargers.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Charger stations. We cannot get along without that. Going to modernize transit and improve accessibility, some safety programs. But all of this is less than half of what is being called infrastructure.
Right. The rest of it, it's been deemed human infrastructure. And I'm not sure what that means. But what it means is if you want to spend a lot more money and make it look like you're passing an infrastructure bill, you just call it something else and stack it in there anyway.
So we've seen human infrastructure at work. It's called payroll protection extension.
There you go. Yep.
California's doing it they're doing an experiment with guaranteed monthly income. You don't have to work. You don't have to look for a job. All you have to do is sit home and receive your $1,000 check and spend it.
It's amazing they don't look around. I mean, it's not like that hasn't been done before. It has, and everywhere where they do it, they stop doing it because it never ends well. But can't seem to learn that lesson.
Some of the indications of inflation are in the basic industries that are going to be supporting the work if the infrastructure bill actually gets passed. You have aluminum, copper, steel, for instance, and they were tanking on the assumption that the Fed was going to raise interest rates and stop all this stuff. But the Fed has come out and said, no, we're not doing that right away. In fact, one of our professional friends, I don't know how you could do this. He actually listened to the entire speech of Mr. Powell this last week.
He's a tough guy. Yeah.
Well, he does have an economics degree from Georgetown, so maybe he's used to boring lectures.
That could be. Yeah, he's been there before. So
anyway, I talked to him on Friday, and he said, Mr. Powell let something slip on this inflation story. He said that in referring to transitory inflation, it's not inflation that you and I think of. It is the rate of change that is transitory. inflation is rising rapidly, relatively speaking, and the Fed expects that the rise will slow down within a year or two or three. But inflation is not going away. When inflation happens, the only way it goes away is you go through a real economic crunch and you get deflation. And that knocks labor out of jobs. It knocks the economy on its backside and people quit spending money and prices fall and supplies build up. So those prices fall on a wholesale level. That gets rid of inflation. Mr. Powell basically said that transitory means the rate of growth in inflation, which means they are not going to raise interest rates. The party is on, and don't expect it to end anytime soon.
They're not going to get in the way. They're going to let this thing run. They've been trying to create inflation for over a decade, and they never got it done. And the shutting down the economy and restarting it, that is causing some transitory or not inflationary push coming up here. So now that it's running, the feds are like, well, we're not going to do anything to slow it down. We couldn't get it started for a decade. So let's let this go for a little while and see where it ends. Bad news is, of course, if it gets out of hand, like you said, Don, the only way to really back that up is to really put a crunch on the economy.
Well, and they're supposed to be creating employment, which they don't really know how to do. They don't have the tools to do that.
They don't. They have nothing to do with that, right?
So what's happening right now is we're getting shrinkflation. What does that mean? Well, it means that your box of Cheerios is the same size. It has a slightly different picture or logo on the front, but the content has been shrunk by a little less than 2 ounces. Price is the same. The box looks pretty much the same. But you get less take it home.
You get less Cheerios. So that's definitely inflation, but you don't see the price go up. So they're trying to camouflage it best they can.
I think it's pretty easy to see at the checkout stand when you look on the other side and you see all those candy bars over there.
Sure, yep.
The packages are the same, but you pick them up and you can tell it's just not much here anymore. And it just so happens this is a little more expensive than it used to be. You know, I don't want to say I remember when, because that would disclose how old I am. But I do remember when candy bars were bigger than they are today, and they cost a whole lot less.
Of course.
That shrinkflation is going on all around the marketplace. One of the areas that it does show up is not shrinking the size of automobiles, but those are real price hikes that are going on. The lack of semiconductors has significantly reduced production in automobile manufacturing. And that's not going to change for 1 to 2 years, could run into 2.5 before the semi production is back up to pre-pandemic levels. And at that point, car prices are bound to come down. So I think those are probably transitory.
Yep.
What's not are the wage increases that businesses are having to offer in order to get people to come to work. Because businesses are competing with the U.S. government on doling out money. And the U.S. government says, you don't have to work. We're Big Brother. And in this case, we really are here to help you. Unlike when the IRS shows up.
Who's almost never there to help you. They're there to help themselves to your bank account. But the wage increases, that's a little stickier issue. Those are fixed costs that are going to be staying with things, all kinds of things. I know at our local Safeway, they're advertising. They've been advertising help wanted for a long period of time, and now they're saying help wanted, and you can make as much as $20 an hour. And so they're trying to let you know, hey, this is a good job. Come on in. And that's probably, you know, an increase over what it used to be, or they wouldn't be advertising it. So those wage increases are real, and those increase costs much longer term.
So I live in Kitsap County, and my favorite restaurant, we were in there for dinner the other night, and they have limited seating.
Right.
And it's not because they don't want more people. But in talking with the owner, who we've known for a very long time, says she can't get people to come to work. She can't find anybody
right
to work as servers. So she can't seat more than she's doing right now, which leaves a couple of nights I've been in there lately, about half the restaurant. She's just not seating. It's not that nobody would come, except nobody will come to work.
That makes it hard. It makes it hard to run. If you're in the service industry and you can't get enough people to come in to service the number of people there, that's tough. You just can't do it. You really can't open the place up. You have to cut back on everything, and that's just not good. Especially when this should be our recovery period. You know, those wages
don't get cut.
Nope. You've been hired there. It's really hard to roll those back, and that's why that can lead to some longer term inflation. That's bringing us right to the bottom of the hour here. We're going to get out of here for a quick break. We would like to remind everyone again, next Saturday, August 7th, is our August market update. It's 9:15. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. It's well worth your time. We think it's very interesting anyway. And we're getting good attendance. A lot of people show up, and we get some of the best questions during that webinar. So get your questions together and register IRIRadio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at IRIRadio.com. and log on for a free report. That's IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770.
Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind about it.
Well, one of the things that has had a detour is almost any consumer product that people would want to buy. They have been in short supply, and manufacturers doing what they can to make adjustments, and that's where the shrinkflation comes from. If you can't get enough of your, let's take oats in the case of Cheerios, you can't get enough oats to make as much as you would normally make, you can shrink the size of the package, still have the number of boxes being shipped out for people to buy. It's just that they're getting less. Prices go up. Consumer behavior is actually going to be critical in determining whether or not inflation is persistent over a longer period of time. And that's something that the Fed cannot control. If inflation seems to be problematic at the household level, people start buying what they think they might need now, because if they wait, it will be more expensive. And what that does is that puts pressure on producers to pump more stuff out now.
Remember trying to find toilet paper at the beginning of the pandemic? Wasn't that fun? So that's what happens. So you buy as much as you can find.
That becomes self-fulfilling inflationary impact. Now, the opposite, the Fed also can't do anything about, and that's deflation. And that's when people say to themselves, I think this is going to be cheaper in 6 months. I can get by without it now. And so they don't buy it, and it does get cheaper. And they say, maybe I don't need that for another 3 months, and maybe it'll be cheaper yet. And then you end up in deflation, uncontrolled, turns into depression. The Fed does not want that. And how do they avoid that? They lower interest rates. How low can they go? They have spent, and the adage is, they've spent all their bullets.
Yep,
they don't have anything left.
And people say, they talk about negative interest rates, and that's something. If you look around the world, we've seen those in place. We've seen them not work. And most countries have abandoned negative interest rate policies because there was nothing there. There was no gain. And so when you hit zero, you're at zero. And then they're out of gas. There's nothing else they have left to use.
So if you're looking for school supplies for your kids or grandkids, you should be shopping right now to find it. You may have to shop more than one time to get what you're after. And the reason for that is a lot of the stuff that we buy in the United States comes from Southeast Asia, China, Vietnam, Indonesia, India. I mean, you name it. We have shipped work overseas, And we have benefited from substantially lower prices. We have raised our standard of living as well as standard of living overseas. But when things don't work right, such as the just-in-time supply chain, mm-hmm. boy, is it hard to find what you want at a price you would like to pay.
It can get ugly. The idea was to, you know, diversify the supply chain and not have just things coming from a couple of countries, having things coming from all over the world, and just, like you said, just in time, just as much as we need, when we need it. And that's very efficient. But if there's a breakdown, it shows up that whole supply chain connection is pretty fragile, and once it's broken, it takes quite a while to catch up again.
So in our morning show, we have talked for months about the backlog of shipping containers that have been stacking up at Long Beach and LA, and we actually see them anchored here in Puget Sound where they can't get into port. Part of that's a labor problem, particularly with the virus telling people they can't get close together, you have to wear a mask, and people are ill. So the labor to unload containers has been limited. So they back up. Well, what is also happening is that the normal process is these big cranes you see down on the waterfront in Seattle or in Tacoma, they're picking up the containers off the ships. They're moving them over to where they get set on rail cars, and they get shipped across the country to a place where another big crane picks them up off the rail car and puts them on a truck for local to a local distributor. And then Amazon picks them up and takes them to your front door. But in Chicago, for instance, they are so backlogged with containers, they've told the ports here on the West Coast, quit sending them to us. We don't have any place to put
them. Can't store them, can't move them fast enough to make any space, so they're maxed out.
So if you want to start thinking about Christmas stuff, now's a good time to start thinking about it, because the normal Christmas inventory may not show up until after the holidays.
But it will be
cheap then.
That's not our opinion either. That's from the shippers. That's from the people who move the goods, saying, hey, you know what? If you can find it now, if I was you, I would buy it now. That's their message right now.
So that is a transitory problem. It may take a couple of years for the shipping transit line between Asia, the United States, and points inland to actually work its way out. Mm-hmm. The question will be whether or not people get worried about rising prices and start buying things in advance of their actual need. And that means price inflation may be more permanent. As I said in the last segment, the Fed is actually not talking about transitory prices. They're talking about the rate of growth in prices being transitory. So we, other than I think perhaps fuel, I mean, fuel has more factors to it. So we're seeing some high prices now. Those are probably going to obviate, because higher prices will bring more production online. If not from OPEC, they'll get high enough that even here in the United States will be producing more. Yeah, in spite of certain things that would have solved that problem, like the XL pipeline having been stopped. But Canada is going to build a pipeline to British Columbia, so they're going to get our work, because they're going to say, well, if you guys aren't going to build it, we will.
Shrewd.
Where there's a
yeah.
need, somebody will stand up and fix it.
It's going to happen, yep.
In a capitalized society. But we're looking at all this news, and one of the things that is often headline is that prices are so high, the market cannot stay at this level. A crash must be coming.
Well, how often have we heard that? I mean, that's one of the most popular predictions ever been made. The big crash just around the corner. It's always just around the corner.
And I am certain that one is coming.
Indeed.
Whether or not it's this year or next decade, nobody knows the points in between or what will be the catalyst that would cause it to happen.
Correct.
Just because we are at new highs does not justify anticipating the next bear market.
No, a new market high, in fact, tends to be a bullish indicator, of course. That means money's flowing into the market. People are buying. And, 6 months later, prices tend to be higher than they are right now. So it's actually a bullish indicator, not a bearish indicator. But it is a great time if you're a commentator on television or on the radio, or you're selling a newsletter, to get a lot of attention by saying, hey, we're at record highs. Guess what? The crash is just around the corner, and everybody's got to buy it to see it. Everybody's got to hear why you think that. And so it's great for drumming up business, but predicting a crash is just a shot in the dark. They really have nothing to base that on.
So I answer that frequent question about what is the market going to do next week, next month, or next year with, we don't know, because we do not forecast.
It's a much easier, much more honest response, because no one really knows. And anything other than just saying, well, it might be up a little and it might be down a little, it's just a guess. No, we can't see what's coming up. And this market, especially the market we're in now, the current market environment changes very, very rapidly, and extremely large swings. And there's just no way to tell where this thing is going, and just day to day, let alone say, hey, what do you think about the next year? There's just no chance that you can make an accurate prediction there.
And using long-term averages to build a portfolio as the means of dealing with the unknown next year or the next decade, depending upon your time horizon, is irrational. It is what the industry does, but it's doing so on a failing foundation that bonds are a risk offset, and bonds are no longer a risk offset. Bonds have been for nearly four decades because interest rates were falling. The 10-year rate on the Treasury has dropped from 13% to 1.3%. That's a huge drop.
That's and a big
falling,
move, yeah.
Falling interest rates make bonds good investments. So when you, as a boomer or near boomer, preparing for retirement, and you're told that because of your risk aversion, you should have 40 or 50% in your bonds, and now that you're 10 years older, you should have 60% of your portfolio in bonds. That's bad structure. How do you deal with that? Well, we talk about that. We try to educate you about how you manage that kind of risk in our monthly webinars. And one's coming up next Saturday at 9:15. You register at iriradio.com. You will learn a lot. Those who forecast often get caught with the forecast not coming true.
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to rationalize it. Well, if only this one thing would have gone my way, I would have been right. It's just this one thing. It didn't happen the way I thought it would happen. Or I know it didn't happen, but I was so close.
And they actually say that stuff out loud. You know, it's like, oh, look at that. I was pretty close. And of course, it doesn't do you any good, but it's just, those are all just sales pitches. You know, all of those predictions are sales pitches saying, hey, look at what I think is about to happen. And it's way worse than what everybody else thinks is going to happen. So you should probably listen to me. And then it doesn't happen time and time again. But as long as you have that good excuse to rationalize why you got there, you're going to put another one out, and hopefully, you know, you're going to sell more newsletters next month too, because you can make that same prediction over and over, whether you're right or not. And that's just the nature of human nature. People want rational reasoning for what's going on out there, and if you can look like you have a rational reason, that can help you. That can get you some readership. We are at the bottom of the hour here. Time for, we are up against our last break of the afternoon. We have plenty of time to get to your call. If you'd like to give us a call with a question about anything related to investing, that number is 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at iriradio.com. That's help at iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.
Well, I thought it was going to rain today, but it hasn't. That's fine with me. We're talking about bonds, and it may sound like we don't believe in bonds. Well, we do. We believe in owning bonds when bonds make sense, when they are adding value to your portfolio, not detracting from the rate of return, not adding risk to your portfolio. There's a time to own bonds. There's a season for everything. I think that's biblical. Sometimes it's stocks, sometimes it's bonds, sometimes it's real estate, sometimes it's commodities. These things cycle. Why would you want to own a major portion of your portfolio in an asset that is losing value consistently?
That's one of the biggest reasons that we ended up shifting our strategy away from that pie chart, is because we kept asking ourselves the same question. We're fiduciary advisors. We're supposed to be protecting the capital of our clients. And that pie chart portfolio is built to make sure that part of it's losing money all the time. That's the way it's supposed to work. When something's going up, something else is going down. And they're supposed to balance each other out. And it's so hard to get your head around long-term negative trends in things like emerging markets. And it's like, well, why own that for 10 years? If it's been losing money for 10 years, wouldn't it be a better idea to have your capital deployed elsewhere? And that's why we just had to leave it. We had to leave it and build our own strategy going forward, saying, hey, let's buy the strength in the market and avoid the weakness and see how that goes. And it turns out we're doing very, very well. And more importantly, we're protecting our investors' capital.
So one thing that is absolute, and that is the future is unknown and it is unknowable. Nobody knows either one of those. What we do know is that what's happened over the last 40 or 50 or 80 years is irrelevant to today's market. This is a totally different market. There was an old ad that GM ran when they were having trouble selling Buick, and the ad was, "This isn't your father's Buick." Well, it sure looked a lot like it. And most people have their grandfather's portfolio. And this is a different world. If you go back and look at the portfolio structure that is common over the last 30, well, let's say let the last, yeah, the last 30 years since the 80s,
right.
That's modern portfolio theory. That's when desktop computers became affordable enough. A financial advisor could actually run software to do this and take a look at it. And it makes pretty charts. It sounds pretty rational, but Amazon didn't exist 30 years ago. It wasn't a major driver of the market. Online shopping wasn't a major driver. These things are different. And what do we do differently here? We look at what's going on in the near term and adjust as markets change, instead of based on assuming that some long-term average is actually going to work its way out. There is a way to manage risk, sometimes with bonds and sometimes without it. We view the marketplace in the same way that you'd watch a football game. Assuming you're on the 50-yard line, you've got a good seat, most of the action occurs between the 30 and the 30. Now, in my illustration here, one field goal, one goalpost is all equities. It may be international or domestic, but it's all equities. And on the other goalpost, that's all cash. Between the 30 and the cash are bonds. Now, sometimes the play actually ends up down on that end of the ball field, and everything is falling apart, including the bonds, and you should be in cash. On the other end, everything is working right, and you should be in domestic or international equities, since commodities show up there somewhere as you move between the 30 and that goalpost. So the game changes. You don't expect a football team to go out with one play and play the game and win. And that's what people do with a portfolio. They set up their strategy, one play, and they expect that they're going to win. That doesn't make any sense. Your strategy has to change with the economy and the market.
Because it changes so much. Yeah, they hand you that pie chart and they say, okay, we're done. You fill out your risk return questionnaire. They hand you the portfolio and no more changes are going to happen. There'll be some minor rebalancing from time to time, but that's it. The relationship between all of your asset classes is going to remain the same. You're never going to say, you know what, I shouldn't own bonds right now. They're always going to be there, whether they're making money or losing money. And you're never going to say, hey, I should have gold right now, or I should have no gold right now. It doesn't make any difference. It's going to stay the same. It's just static. And so that's why there's no protection there. The only protection is extremely long periods of time. If you can wait long enough, your portfolio may come back in your lifetime, and it may not. But that's the only protection that's in there. It's funny they never say it that way, though, when they hand you that pie chart.
Well, you mentioned your lifetime, and that's the way it's supposed to work. You're not supposed to take your money out of your account. You're supposed to give it to us to manage for your lifetime. You've turned it over to us, and you don't get it back, because if you take any out, this thing may not work. We need the rest of your lifetime for the plan to work. But that's not the way you walked in to get the advice.
Right.
You wanted to be able to spend the money and know there was plenty left over after you're gone to leave some legacy for the family or for charity. So this is a big problem for companies, pension plans, insurance companies that pay out income to retirees or to people who are disabled for various reasons. What are they doing in this marketplace? Well, one of the things they're doing is they are no longer big bond buyers. They aren't heavy sellers because they own these things for the long term. They really do have a long-term window. When they're looking at life expectancies that just a few decades ago were 17 years after retirement or less, they're now 30 years after retirement or more, and they're still committed to make these pension payments, and you expect them to do so too. With interest rates at 1%, Amazon just sold some bonds. One of those tranches of bonds was a 40-year bond, and the rate was 0.92. It was less than 1% for 40 years.
A little less than 1% for 40 years. Boy, that's someone with a long-term belief that inflation is not going to be an issue at all. And I don't see how that could possibly come true.
So what is happening to replace that interest income from the bond portfolio for these pension plans and insurance companies? Well, they have become home buyers.
There we go.
Yeah, now, you know, the people at the company, I'm not talking about the people who work for the company being home buyers. I'm talking about the company is the home buyer. There are builders of big subdivisions, one of which is D.R. Horton, and they recently completed a 24-home neighborhood called Amber Pines at Foster Ridge in Conroe, Texas.
124 homes.
And what you build them because you're going to sell them. The local real estate broker never had a chance because they put the 124 homes up for auction and sold it to a single buyer.
Bought the whole neighborhood. That's the way to do it right there if you're trying to move real estate.
So who would do that? Well, the company was called Fundrise LLC, and they own and manage properties on behalf of thousands of investors. They bought 124 homes that are now rental homes for rent, buyers for rent. That's what they're doing. And there's another one, Tricon Residential. They have one of the largest pools of rental homes, and they're about to get bigger, because they are getting about $1.5 billion from the Teachers Retirement System of Texas and Pacific Life Insurance Company and another undisclosed investor. And they're going to use that and borrow additional money for $5 billion to purchase 18,000 single-family homes for rent. Now you say, well, it's no wonder home prices are so high with these big guys in there. Well, yes and no. They are buying, and the fact that they can go in and buy a whole bunch of them at one time, but they're still not 50% of the total buyers in the marketplace.
Right, so, and again, they're buying them to rent them out. They're not going to flip these and put them back on the market. They're going to buy them. They want to fill them up with renters, and they want cash flow to replace those the money they're not getting from their bond portfolio. They're going to replace that with rental money from all these homes. That's the plan.
And so they're not worried about making a mortgage payment because they're owning these properties for 30 years,
right,
or longer perhaps. What they get is rents typically rise with inflation. Bond interest rates do not. So they get some inflation protected cash flow. And on top of that, real estate is one of the more highly correlated assets with inflation over time. So their balance sheet will grow, which makes them a more secure entity, and they have better cash flow, which means they can make the payments to pension beneficiaries more easily with more reliability. That's why they're in the market, and they are abandoning the bond market to do this. It's even junk bonds in today's marketplace are less than inflation, it makes no rational sense that companies that are on the verge of bankruptcy can borrow money for less than the inflation rate. Investors have lost perspective in how they value risk. You need better tools. We offer education on that on our upcoming webinar next Saturday at 9:15 a.m. Register at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. If you don't receive our weekend review, you should be among the nearly 1,000 people who get it every week. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Weekend review in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email. If you want to know what a different risk management process can do to enhance your returns, send us an email, help@iriradio.com, 401k report in the subject, and your first and last name in the body of the email, and we'd be glad to do that. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Have a great weekend.